Yoga Vashishtha, Part 23 by Swami Surya Devananda. Salutations to that reality in which all the elements and all the animate and inanimate beings shine as if they have an independent existence, and in which they exist for a time and into which they merge. Salutations to that consciousness which is the source of the apparently distinct threefold divisions of knower, knowledge and known, seer, sight and seen, doer, doing and deed. Salutations to that bliss absolute, the ocean of bliss, which is the life of all beings, whose happiness and unfoldment is derived from the shower of spray from that ocean of bliss. The last time, we covered a small story among the many in the Yoga Vashishtha. And as we mentioned earlier, it's a sort of story in a story to drive home a point. The dreadful elephant in the forest of samsara. As long as this elephant roams in the forest of the body, samsara, or world appearance, persists. We are not here to do this and that, but through doing, to restore our feeling of being to its natural state. Today, we conclude this series with a focus on these 5 points. What liberated sages conclude: attitudes conducive to liberation, overcoming samsara and some sorrow, a noble person, and last of all, Vashishtha's concluding instructions. Just a thought. I'm not going to try to convince anyone about anything, only summarize the important teachings of the great sage Vashishtha. Sincere seekers will be eager to meditate relentlessly and validate the teachings for themselves. Let us then just review some important teachings and look into them a little. Greetings. Let us start with the first of the concluding teachings that we have on our agenda for today. Vashishtha says, there is no such thing as ignorance or maya as reality. Whatever is seen in front of you is a pure, ever-peaceful, omnipotent Brahman. See, my friends, for there to be something called reality, there must be some sort of unreality. You cannot have reality without unreality. There must also be something that knows reality and unreality and the difference between them. Who knows this? The knowable, the knower, both of them arise in knowingness, which is the substratum and which is all there is. The substratum is the ever pure, ever peaceful Brahman or the Absolute. Attitudes conducive to liberation. Inwardly remain at peace in the self, but outwardly as if you are deaf, dumb, and blind. Live an active life, but remain as if in deep sleep. Inwardly renounce everything, outwardly do whatever is necessary. The existence of the mind is sorrow, the absence of mental activity is bliss. Now let us get into it just a little bit. Peace, my friends, is experienced when the urge to react does not surge within or does not spike within. This state does not come easily because we are so used to reacting that we call it normal and human. But my friends, one thing from the get-go, we are not human. There is a human condition that we are passing through and we are aware of it. The very fact that we are aware of the human condition, we are that awareness that is aware of the human condition. So the human condition that we are passing through to discover our true nature. So how do we get to this natural state, our natural state? First, stop reacting to what is generally considered external or outside. Ask yourself, my friends, is it necessary for me to react to this, that, and the other to live in peace and experience joy? Don't mix up this idea that it's human to react and human to all of that. Remember what we started off with. We are not human. We are passing through a human condition to discover our divine or true nature. If we rewire the mind to equate satisfaction with effort rather than result or outcome of what comes, result, the reactions to things outside will gradually stop. So that's the first thing, rewiring the mind completely to effort. Effort is in our hands, as we've discussed before. Result is conditioned by many, many factors. And result, our mind focused on result or the shape of things is the reason for a lot of the turmoil within our mind, or most of the turmoil. So that's the first thing. Now the second thing. When the outer battle dims, and the outer battle will dim when we stop reacting to things outside and instead rewire ourselves and equate success with effort, then the one becomes aware of the inner battle, my friends, and this is much more fierce. This comes as a shock to most because they have never seen this in this volume or in this intensity. It has always been there. But our attention has been focused towards the outer and we miss the noise of the inner. When it's not focused on the outer and it's focused completely on the inner, we realize the inner turmoil. But if one is established in the habit of relentless vigilance, one is able to not react to these surges because one watches them. One realizes, I am not that which wants to react. I am that which is aware. There is a surge and there is something in me that wants to react to him. I am neither of these. And one stays in what is called witness consciousness. I am that which is aware of this urge. Say there is an urge of whatever, there is something that I see outside, something to eat. And there is something that says, I'd like to have it right now. I'm aware of that. Whatever I have perceived, I'm aware of my reaction to it. And I rest in that awareness rather than get entangled in either one of these. So how does one come to that? And there is a practice that is discussed in the Yoga Vashishta, which I have also covered in a series of Raja Yoga. It's the practice of aligning our breathing with the mantra and using an image of the Lord and putting all these together. Quite simply, if I was to recap it, each time we repeat the mantra one time mentally on exhalation, one time on inhalation. And we try to hold the image of the Lord or Ishta Devata or your chosen ideal along with that. When the mind is holding on to that image and is focused on the rhythm of the breathing and the repetition of the mantra, it stays there and it doesn't get entangled in these inner surges and spikes. They gradually weaken by disuse. They have gained strength by use. They weaken by disuse. And one does not get entangled in all these surges of conditioning because one abides in witness consciousness. Initially for this witness consciousness, you can go to it plain Jane without any of the support. But my friends, that is a very steep climb and one has to practice for a significant amount of time a day. And one has to also cut out or thin out outer stimulus to a large degree, which means live in a very disciplined manner. That usually is not possible for most because there is some kind of engagement that we have with the outer world. So the support structure of the breathing, the mantra, and the image comes in handy to disengage the mind from consciousness. And I have covered these more in the series on Raja Yoga. So letting go of all these surges by not reacting to them leads to inner renunciation. Inner renunciation is a disentanglement from notions, from conditioning, from all these ideas that are there within consciousness, to rest in consciousness itself and not the notions or ideas. This is inner freedom, my friends. With this inner freedom, one can still do what needs to be done, when it needs to be done, in the best manner possible. So, things still get done, and they get done very well, but without all that chaos and turmoil in the mind. The mind is gradually drained of all this turmoil, and it begins to rest in itself. See, these notions are also made of consciousness, but they're sort of perversions or twists in or kinks in consciousness. When the juice is drained out of them by disengagement, then that it returns to its natural state as consciousness. What is the mind ultimately? Is the mind separate from consciousness? Are notions separate from consciousness? Is the notion of anger or I like or I don't like different in some way from consciousness that knows them? How is it all different when it's happening in the same plane? And so, the existence of conditioning itself is sorrow. The absence of conditioning is itself bliss. Let's move on to the next point. Withdraw yourself from objective experience. Remain unmoved by the pleasant and unpleasant like a rock. Remain silent, without thinking, but established in nirvana. Now let us go into it a little bit. As long as we are involved in objective experience, we will not experience our subjective nature. This is something we have to drive home again and again and again. And people keep saying, but what about objective experience? What about the world? What about this? What about that? Isn't it human? When we come to the spiritual self, we have to let go of some of that human condition to be able to dwell in the spirit. As long as we are involved in objective experience, we will not experience our subjective nature. Vigilance, or watching the mind relentlessly, consciousness ultimately watching itself, is the crystal of awareness turned upon itself and held on itself steadily. This is something we have to come to, not only if we want to know the truth or knowledge of the self or God realization, but also if we want peace and turmoil. If we want peace, we have to disengage from everything that is unpeaceful. And that is within our own mind. We are not going to have peace by going and buying it at the store or buying it online. This just does not happen. This is achieved by diligence and sincere practice, both on the mat and in life. We can still do what needs to be done while this inner steadiness increases and the joy of one's true nature surges naturally. But the thing that has to be let go is the attention on our own notions and the attention more on things outside rather than our own nature, our own consciousness, our own mind. And this does not happen unless you see the worthlessness of trivial pursuit. Chasing this, that, and the other. What does it lead to? What has it given you? What does selfishness of putting my interest first and me first, what has it given me except more turmoil? It may bring some trinkets in terms of a little bit more of this and a little bit more of that, but look at the destruction it creates in the chaos in the mind. So this threshold of something lasting seems distant and difficult, but it is not. Withdrawing yourself from objective experience is necessary for subjective experience to blossom. Now, my friends, let us talk a little bit about a noble person. Vasishtha has laid out in a very compact manner some of the traits or qualities or markings of a noble person. And what are we talking in terms of noble? A noble person is one that does not get entangled in all of the stuff that we have just talked about, our notions, our likes, our dislikes, all of that. Bypassing that, he's able to see things as they are, do things that need to be done, when they need to be done, and he lives a life without conflict or turmoil, focused on one single goal, to know himself. And so he's gradually moving towards this inner realization if he's not there already. What are some of the qualities or traits or markings of this noble person? So let us go back, and some of it may be redundant, but we have to work with this because we are picking up the most important teachings as we go along. One, does what needs to be done. We've discussed this many, many times before. It sounds very simple, will I do what needs to be done, but on its own merit, because it needs to be done, when it needs to be done, without the what's in it for me and all of that stuff. So this what's in it for me strengthens the little me. The little me is itself a breaker or a spoiler of our peace. So we go after something trying to get peace and satisfaction, and we ourselves are spoiling our own party. We have to see this, that we are spoiling our own party. We are the spoiler in our own life, nobody else. And when we see this and say enough, enough of all this, no more, we can move on beyond it. So for this, we have to stand with the situation. One learns and look at situations not apart and say, how can I use this for myself? But when you see something and it needs to be done, it needs to be done. Simple example. You're walking by the road. It may be your neighbor's house. It may not be your house. But there's something, a piece of paper or something down there. You pick it up. The question is not my house. It's his house. Doesn't enter your mind. There's a piece of paper there. I'm walking past it. It doesn't need to be there. I pick it up. The search might come up, but it's not my house. Why should I? You ignore, you're aware of that. You ignore that. You pick up the paper and you toss it. That's it. As simple as that. So this is a very important milestone in the spiritual journey, as the pivot happens when one is not riveted to either what's outside and these surges within one's consciousness. Two, refrain from doing what should not be done. This goes hand in hand with what we have just discussed. Doing what needs to be done, we also refrain from not doing or from doing what should not be done. When things happen and we feel that it should not be done, there might be a surge, but it's in my interest, but it may benefit me, but in the long run, and things of that nature. But how will they think of me? How will they take me if I don't? There's always that other side that comes up. So this goes along with the first, but inner derailment can block this. If one does not, while doing what needs to be done, at the same time refrain from what should not be done, a fall is inevitable. Both these, doing what needs to be done and not doing what should not be done, have to go together. This is a discipline that is imposed on consciousness to realize or to know or to restore itself. If both these are not done together, backsliding is inevitable and a downward spiral will happen. both doing what needs to be done and refraining what should not be done, they happen together. Swami Shivananda has a wonderful help for spiritual seekers towards this doing and not doing thing. He calls it Shivananda's Trishul. My friends, the Trishul is a trident, like a kind of three-pronged spear, because it's got three tips to it. And these three prongs are three parts of a system that help you prevent any fall or backsliding. One is a resolve form in writing. I will clean my mind or purify my mind, or I will do this and I will achieve a state that is not reacting or whatever. A resolve form in writing that I will do this or I will accomplish this. When you have a resolve, you must also have a system or a plan towards that resolve. And this is the second part. This, a well thought out plan for all spiritual activities in the form of a spiritual diary and an effective system of self-accountability and intelligent self-punishment. So three things are there. One is a resolve. Two is a plan, a well-thought-out plan, spiritual diary. These are going to be the activities of my day, and I am going to do this. This will prevent you from doing things on the spur of the moment or by impulse reaction, which are generally to these impulses or vasanas and conditioning. And three, if there is a slip, there must be a system for self-accountability and self-punishment, intelligent self-punishment. I'll skip one meal, or I'll do so many extra rounds of japa, or whatever, or I'll sign a check and do some charity, or whatever. Something that holds ourselves accountable. When we have a resolve, an intelligent plan for all of our activities, which automatically disallows what should not happen, and a system for self-accountability, we have a foolproof system towards moving towards this. This will keep in check the two things that we have talked about: doing what should be done, and not doing what should not be done. You to try and accomplish this without an intelligent system, as we have just discussed, is very difficult, almost futile. So three, let us move on. We have talked about doing what needs to be done. We have talked about not doing what should not be done. And in that, we introduced Swami Shivananda's Trishul. Now the third point. Live a simple and natural life. A simple life is a life with one focus that threads all the activities of our life. This, my friends, will drain out so much chaos, so much turmoil within our life. Though there are different activities, they can all be done in a way that makes all of an activity a sacrifice, by sacrificing the ego. That can be the theme that underlies all the activity. Why do I do that? Why do I do this? In everything, I do it as a way to drain the ego. Because watching the mind relentlessly does not allow participation of the ego in the form of all of its thoughts and notions. When selfishness is squeezed out of the equation, one leads a natural life. Till there is this involvement or entanglement with selfishness, a natural life is not possible, because we are not one with nature or everything. We are only one with a little I, me, and my in all of its shapes. Then, when all of this is squeezed out, one stands, lives a natural life, because one stands with a wider fabric of nature or creation and not apart from it. Now here's a fourth one. Accept whatever happens, but live in accordance with the scriptures while engaging ourselves in appropriate activity. When we have not accomplished the goal ourselves, the teachings of the scripture become the guidelines for action. The teachings of the sages who have accomplished the state become the guidelines for action. A simple way through all of this, my friends, is do your best and accept the rest. This is a very good maxim to live by. Many who have achieved the goal before us have left their writings. To live in accordance with their teachings, to live in accordance with the teachings of the scriptures is essential. If we don't live in accordance with the higher, with what has been handed down, we will live in accordance with our desires, with our likes, with our dislikes, and we will strengthen our bondage and increase our chaos. The way out of this is to follow the path of those who have gone before us. And this is well laid in a lot of the scriptures of yoga and very, very prominent or clear in the Yoga Vashishta. See, society changes with time, and all that is proper and not proper also seems to change. But what doesn't change is what is right. What is right is different from what is proper and what is acceptable. In our lives, we have seen what is acceptable and not acceptable change. But this sense of what is right, lying is not right, being honest is right, things of that nature, that does not change. So what is considered proper may not be right spiritually. Sages have mentioned three kinds of truth. One is a behavioral truth, which changes with time. What was considered proper and what was considered right in terms of behavior, this changes with time. Then there is a perceptional truth. There is a sort of truth that things appear outside, and that is true, but it is true perceptionally, from the point of perception. And there is another truth that is known intuitionally, not perceptionally. And this truth, which is known intuitionally, is the absolute truth. It is a truth that does not rely on perception and does not rely on the norms of society. So the scriptures tell us about these three truths: perceptional truth, relative truth, behavioral truth, perceptional truth, and absolute truth. Three of these. Society will be what it is from time to time. There is no point and there is no need and there is no good in trying to war with it. Let society be what it is from time to time. Just let it be. When you take the spiritual path, my friends, you are in a different flow. And you should not get caught up in society's flow. This may seem strange, but it is necessary. And this is why people break off and they go off either to a monastery or some kind of spiritual group in the form of satsang, etc. One learns to let go of the outer by being anchored in the inner, or one's spiritual ideal in the heart. One does not reject life, but treads it carefully, never letting go of the goal in one's own heart. Friends, we've been talking a bit, but these are critical because these are the final instructions that Vashishtha gives Rama. And right now we come to his concluding instructions, four of them. He says, all this creation is peace, infinite and eternal. Behold all this as the infinite consciousness and rest in peace. Two, true abandonment of all actions is constant awareness that all this is the Lord, who is omnipresent, unborn, and infinite consciousness. Three, yoga is the cessation of experience of objects. Rest in yoga and live. Then you will be free from the painful experience of I and mine. And four, be freed from the experience of objects and do what needs to be done. These were the last four concluding instructions of Vashishtha, and I have not expanded on this because we have talked on many of these earlier, and each one can think of each, ponder on them for themselves. Let us summarize what we have concluded today. We focused on what liberated sages conclude: attitudes conducive to liberation, overcoming samsara and some sorrow, a noble person, and we spent a little bit more time on that one. And last of all, Vasishtha's concluding instructions. Look for these, my friends. Very soon, I'll have the main points or synopsis or summary that we have had in individual handouts throughout the 23 sessions together, compiled into an ebook. These will be in two formats: for print, which will be an 8.5 by 11 inches or standard sheets of paper that I used in the West, and also for readers, which will be in half the size or 5.5 inches by 8.5 inches. This should work on most electronic readers. Look for these on my website at suryadevananda.org. Friends, thank you for joining me today and for this entire series, 23 sessions together. To download this video, audio, PDF handout, or the ebooks that I've just mentioned, kindly visit suryadevananda.org. Thank you.